This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
On this episode of Technology Translated, Jared Morris, VP of Rainmaker.fm, joins us for an in-depth conversation on podcasting. Now, whether you've already got a podcast and you want to take it to the next level, or if you're planning to start one this year, Jared has a lot of insights. He runs multiple shows, he publishes podcasts every single day, and he's going to give you the brain dump on what you need to know. This is an episode you don't want to miss. So, Jared, thank you very much for joining me on Technology Translated. It's good to have you here.
Certainly. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Now, we've had the opportunity to hang out a little bit in person from time to time and grab a cup of coffee and have a good chat. And there are always interesting conversations about the things that we do in this world. And I thought it would be fun to have a similar casual conversation, only this time we're going to record it and share it with the world. What do you say?
That's perfect. And I'm not drinking coffee.
Okay.
But that's because it's later in the afternoon, so I've switched to water now.
I am still drinking coffee. I probably shouldn't be, but my life is absolutely fueled by this stuff, so.
Yeah. Well, some days you have to drink coffee a little later in the day.
Yeah, there was an event that was sponsored by, I believe it was by Google, actually, that happened here at the Geek House earlier in the day, and they sent a whole bunch of Starbucks, so there's still a ton of coffee lying around just waiting to get consumed.
Very nice. Well, then you got to do it.
So you are the host of The Showrunner, which is a fantastic show for anybody who is wanting to learn more about podcasting, how to do it, the processes involved, types of content to create, all of that kind of stuff. On Technology Translated, we try to speak to a non-techie audience. So I thought today we would talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls and the things that people get stuck on when they start podcasting. Mm-hmm. And how to help them to get started without making too many excuses either. And this is something you guys have talked about extensively. You don't necessarily need all the best of everything. Just get going. But if somebody's going to just get going, what would you say are the minimum things that they need? What would you recommend so that they can actually get off and running and get started?
That's a great question. I think to start out, the number one thing that you need more than anything is enthusiasm for a topic. And if you have that, that will carry you so far. And it's really, if you have that, you can start if you have enthusiasm for a topic. So that's number one. And I think then have a general understanding of the audience that you're going to be talking to. You don't need to know everything. You don't, you know, we talk about, you know, knowing your audience of one, and I think that's good to have as specific an idea of who you're talking to as possible, but just understand that that will probably change. It will evolve as you go, so you don't want to get the paralysis through analysis where all of that stuff has to be in line to go. Be enthusiastic about your topic, have a general sense of who you're talking to, and you can get going. And then from a technical standpoint, we see so often people really get stuck, you know, trying to make sure they have all this gear and that they have the perfect setup. I mean, to get started, you can get a USB microphone for $60 to $100. You know, if you have a Mac, you can record with GarageBand, which comes with the operating system now. You can use Audacity if you're not on a Mac, and there, you know, there are free tools that you can use to edit. And if you're going to be doing an interview show, you can get Skype with Call Recorder. So I guess what I'm saying is you can basically get started for $100 or less from the technical standpoint. And if you've got that enthusiasm and you have a basic understanding of the audience, then I think you want to take as quick from point A to point B of getting an episode out as you can. And so that's just, you know, getting a simple setup and then get started and see where it goes. But certainly, especially with the technology part of it, don't let that hold you back. You know, get the minimum that you need and get going, start getting some episodes out there and see where it goes.
Yeah, that's a great point, because even a fairly reasonably inexpensive microphone will give you a huge boost in audio quality, but you don't have to spend a ton of money. What kind of mic do you have?
Right now, I'm using a Rode Podcaster mic, which is actually 4 or 5 years old. This is actually the very first microphone that I started podcasting on, and I'm still using it. It just connects via USB. I mean, I host 5 shows right now, and I don't have that great of a setup, frankly. And I do enough of them now that I'm getting ready to probably budget some legitimate money to get a really good setup here at my house. But I kind of feel to a certain extent like I've earned that just because I've put in so much time. I'm hosting so many shows. You know, we're doing it in Rainmaker FM. You know, I'm turning some of my side projects into business shows. But it's taken me a long time to get here, and I've still been able to have a lot of success even with a pretty basic setup. So for me, it's just the Rode Podcaster mic. And I think that mic is around $200 or something like that. But you can even get a Blue Yeti, something like that, which you can get for even less. And it's going to get – I think the thing that trips people up with audio is they want it to be perfect, and they fail to understand that you just need to meet that minimum level of quality. Now, the minimum level of quality goes up a little bit, maybe every 6 months as more people get on there and it gets a little bit easier to get good audio. But also the technology is getting better and not costing as much. Just get that minimum level of quality, make it good enough, and then you can work on improving it from there.
Yeah, so for anybody that's wondering what the Yeti sounds like, that's what I'm recording on right now. I've been doing most of the recording out of my house as well. Today I'm actually at the Geek House, so you might catch a little background noise. But I brought my Yeti down with me. I think I got it on sale for $120. And I have call recorder, which is what we're using to record the call right now. And so for less than $150, this is the setup that I use for the Frisco podcast, for Technology Translated, and for any other audio that we need to do. So,
yeah. And I will say this, because on the flip side, you know, there's also, well, if it doesn't matter at all, why don't I just use my computer microphone? Going back to the beginning, you know, enthusiasm for your topic, you know, basic understanding of who you're talking to, and a willingness to at least invest a little bit in your project. You know, a willingness to put in that $100, $150 to get you going. You don't want to go out with, you know, with just talking into your computer microphone. So you got to meet that minimum. But, you know, as you just described, it's not that hard to do and to have something to go out the door with.
That is very good advice. So everybody listening, there's really no excuse.
No, there's not.
Get up and running and get moving. Get your podcast out there. One of the things I love about Rainmaker, and I'm going to give Rainmaker a little push here right now, the platform is that people do get hung up on the technical side of getting their podcast out there, creating the feed, getting it into iTunes, all of those kinds of things. And if you're building a business, if you're running a website and the podcast is going to become a significant part of that, definitely consider Rainmaker because they've done a great job of making that all super easy. Can you tell us about what happens kind of behind the scenes or maybe any future plans for what's happening with Rainmaker and audio right now?
Yeah, well, thank you for saying that. And it's, you know, I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but it's my favorite part of the platform because it's the one that I use the most. And It trips people up, you know, the whole managing your podcast feed, kind of separating that from the content feed if you want to, uploading it to iTunes. I think one misconception people have is that you're going to manage your iTunes feed from iTunes. Well, you don't. Everything with your podcast, whether it's being fed into iTunes or any other distribution channel, you know, Stitcher, any places, you're managing most of the information, the meta information from your feed. And that can be a difficult thing to do if you don't have a content management system that makes it easy. And so I think the podcast setup of Rainmaker makes that very simple. You know, it lets you know, hey, you need your iTunes image art to be 1400 by 1400. It should be 3000 by 3000, but it's got to meet this minimum. You know, here's how to set up your categories. Here's how to do this, that, and the other. Here's how to, you know, style your player on the page. So all of that stuff is just very simple, and it removes those headaches because that's, you know, we talk about that enthusiasm for the topic and to get out there. Well, every little hurdle that you go through, well, it'll diminish that a little bit. And if you're struggling just to get your feed into iTunes and to update it and to post your show and do all that, that's going to drain your enthusiasm from just creating content and connecting with an audience because that's the goal. That's what you're trying to do with a podcast. And so anything that you can do to remove some of those technological headaches is going to help. And that's really what we tried to do with the platform was remove those headaches. And, you know, we have some future updates planned in the works too, to make that even better and make the display and the organization of podcasts on your site even better. So it's something we know it's a big part of what people are using the platform for. So we're constantly talking about ways that we can improve it, tweaks we can make, and additional little tools that we can add in there for podcasters.
Well, I, for one, am very appreciative of how easy it is. When I started the Frisco podcast, Rainmaker was not around, and I'm a pretty technical guy, and it was still a huge pain for me to get everything set up and working mm-hmm. the way I wanted to. So I can only imagine how challenging that feels for people that are not necessarily technically inclined.
Yeah, and the other part of that too, I mean, probably the biggest, to me, it's been the most impressive element of the platform that has grown is just the knowledge base and the documentation back there. And so there are actually now walkthroughs where, you know, if you get in there and you say, hey, I want to start a podcast, but I don't really know what to do, it will walk you through step by step everything that you need to do. So it removes all of it, all of those headaches where you don't even have to worry, how do I figure out how to use this? It's right there. And again, you know, for me, I'm not a technological person. You know, I don't geek out about microphones. I don't, you know, kind of geek out about the back end stuff. That's not me. I want to create my content. I want to connect with my audience. And anything that is not me doing that is a headache to me. And I know that a lot of the people that use the platform feel a similar way. And that's a group of people that this platform was designed for. Certainly with the podcast, I mean, I've been fortunate to have a lot of input into how that has worked. It's kind of been suggestions that I've made. It's really been to kind of make it idiot-proof back there, because sometimes that's how I feel when it comes to technology stuff. But this, you know, makes it easy and allows me to just connect, which is the whole reason why I got into running shows in the first place.
And how many shows are you doing now? You said five?
Right now, I'm running actively five shows.
Five different shows, not just 5 days a week.
Right, yeah, five different shows.
Man, I have a hard enough time, and this is going to be a good segue, actually. I have a hard enough time keeping up with the two that I do, and even my schedule hasn't been perfect there. So I cannot imagine having five different shows running simultaneously.
Yeah, it is a challenge. I think that just through experience, I've developed systems for recording and for editing and for, you know, getting the posts up that really help. Obviously, with Rainmaker FM, having the production team that we have makes that possible. I mean, if I had to do all of the editing for the showrunner and the lead myself, it would probably take away from time that I have to do some of these other shows. So I think developing systems and building efficiencies into the process is really important. There's certainly suggestions I can make. A lot of it also is just going to be the idiosyncrasies of how individual people work. But I think that's the one great thing that you learn as you go through it, is especially early on, and especially when you're starting your first show, you know, there are going to be inefficiencies, because it's something that you haven't done before. You're kind of figuring it out. Maybe you're having to learn a new skill, like how to edit or different things like that. But once you get it and add those efficiencies, then you really take off, because again, you just remove yet another hurdle between you and the audience connecting. And that's what then really gives you that extra shot of adrenaline, is when, you know, you get past those first 10 episodes, and then you get past that next typical hurdle, which is 20 to 25 episodes, and you actually start to see the process work, and you start to see the connection with the audience happening. And that's where you really get going. And that's the sweet spot. And the big problem is that a lot of people don't allow themselves to get there. They get discouraged because they have unrealistic expectations for how quickly it'll catch on and the results they can get, you know, really quickly. And it's much more of a long game than some kind of, you know, short, quick hit type thing. As you go through, really look for ways that you can build efficiencies in early. That's one mistake that I made early on when I was running podcasts that I wish I had done a better job of, because I got discouraged and it became very hard to make, you know, as you were just describing, it became very hard, you know, to manage one show, let alone multiple shows. Really understanding how you work, building those efficiencies in, can help you overcome that dip, you know, we talk about on the showrunner that always seems to happen around 7 to 10 episodes for folks, and then again at 20 to 25. And if you can just understand that that's going to happen, because it happens to most people running shows, and if you can really commit to getting past that, now you're really ready to just hit the ground running.
I'm glad you went there, because that really starts to take us into the meat of what we wanted to talk about today. And that is, as people begin producing their shows, they are inevitably going to run up against certain hurdles, certain points at which they might be inclined to stop what they're doing or start to lose a little bit of motivation, things that are going to happen that are going to go wrong. I'll tell you my story here in just a minute that happened very recently, but these things are going to happen to all of us. So let's get into some of the common things that you've experienced, especially because you're teaching so many people about podcasting, mm-hmm. that you're seeing students, for lack of a better term, make the things that you know they're going to run into, and how do we begin to overcome those things so that they don't become a force that kills the motivation for doing the podcast?
Yeah, I think, well, I'll tell you, the one that really stands out is, you know, we talk often about how you want to build trust with your audience, and building trust with the audience, a big part of that is setting an expectation and keeping it. So if your show is going to come out at 10 o'clock on Wednesday, you want to be there at 10 o'clock on Wednesday when people go looking for it. So once you establish that, keeping that schedule, and that can be very difficult for folks right when they start out, especially people who get a little bit impatient. I'm raising my hand because I always get impatient when it comes to launching because I'm so excited about this new idea. I want to just get it out there, get it to the audience as quickly as possible. And so I get that first episode out, and I'm not great with delayed gratification, so I want to get it out. I want it to be in the hands of folks. And one thing I've really learned from John, you know, by doing the showrunner with him, is the benefit of patience. And so he, for Hack the Entrepreneur, he recorded a bunch of episodes and had a bunch of episodes in the can before he went out. And I think what can happen is if you, you know, let's say that you miss your fifth episode early on, that can start to discourage you a little bit. And that may happen because, you know, scheduling breaks down, you have an issue, a technical issue that you couldn't foresee, and that messes up. You know, you just don't plan ahead enough because you don't quite know what to expect. Really trying to plan out your content and maybe having 8 to 10 episodes in the can before you launch, before you bring this out to your audience, can really help you develop that momentum so that you're not constantly scrambling early on. And so you don't have those moments that kind of kill your motivation, frustrate you, and you think, well, I don't have time for this, or I can't do this, or whatever. Building that momentum and building confidence, frankly, especially for new folks, is really important. Being a little bit more deliberate, maybe even than you want to. And again, I admit I don't always take my own advice on this. But then the other thing is, it kind of goes along with this, with keeping that schedule early on, is a lot of times we have that enthusiasm and we have, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10 topics like that we just, you know, we want to get all this out there right now. We have all these topics planned in our head. But once that initial well of ideas goes away, now we have to come up with new ideas, which is, you know, if it's an interview show, that's a little bit easier because you just have to find another interview subject. But if it's not and you have to come up with a topic, that can, again, just present a hurdle where it can present some frustration. And so really having a way to curate your own ideas is important. You know, having an Evernote or having note cards, whatever you use, that when you're in the shower, when you're walking, when you're reading something and you have that eureka moment for, hey, that's a great episode. Okay, I know that I can't record another episode for another few weeks. You don't want to lose that. And if you can have just an entire index of ideas that you can go to on those days when you get behind the microphone and you don't know what to talk about, but you know that you have to fill your slot, you've got to get an episode out there, that can be such a big comfort and a source of strength to be able to draw on to say, okay, I've got this idea, let's go. And it keeps your momentum going. Anything you can do early on to keep the positive momentum going is going to be really helpful.
I love what you said about having several ideas, you know, 8 to 10 in the can before you get too far down the road. Mm-hmm. I foresee that as helping in a number of different facets. One, inevitably things are going to pop up that are going to keep you from being able to produce something on the fly. Meetings, travel, you know, personal situations, whatever the case may be. Everything in the world seems to conspire to steal your momentum one way or another. And if you've got those shows already lined up and produced, it's much easier to keep that weekly promise or whatever your schedule is to the audience. I experienced this very much so last week. Recorded an episode with Rebecca Gill from Web Savvy Marketing and just had numerous technical problems that I couldn't foresee. I didn't even know why they were happening at the time. I tried to edit it all together later, but it just was not telling a very cohesive story because there were so many gaps. Fortunately, Rebecca was very gracious and agreed to come back and re-record the episode with me, which we did just a couple of days ago. But those things are going to happen to all of us. And having that repository of shows already produced gives you some breathing room so that you don't lose your momentum. The other thing I've found it does is it gives me a lot of experience, especially important for people that are fairly new, in a short period of time. Because you're thinking through the interview questions that you're asking, and you're doing that repeatedly, and you're doing a whole lot of editing in a short period of time, writing out your show notes and doing all of those things. So not only is it a little bit more efficient because you're batching it together, but you're gaining more experience in a shorter period of time because you're just hammering on it, you know, one after the other for a period of time.
Yeah, and in fairness to you also, you had some jackass that you scheduled an interview with last week who canceled on you as well.
Well, so, but okay.
Which so will fair. Also happen. Yeah. You know, like schedules happen, and especially for an interview show, you know, when you kind of go, and man, I've had this happen so often, you know, where you're kind of doing just, you know, recording and kind of posting the next day, that kind of thing. You don't really build yourself in buffer zone for inevitably when schedules fail too. And that's another reason why just having them in the can help you, you know, smooth over those bumps.
And that's exactly, that is true. I don't want to call Jared Morris out by name, but, you know, but those things happen, right? I mean, there was some background noise. You knew you weren't going to be able to record, and we weren't going to be able to produce the quality show that we wanted to put out. So, you know, we put it off, and I thought, well, that's all right, because I've got Rebecca lined up, and then I had all the technical issues with Rebecca. You know, I felt bad because I did not push an episode out 1 week, and that is not something that makes me happy at all. I just gave myself a little space and said, all right, I'm not going to beat myself up over it. But this week I'm recording 4 episodes. Next week I've got 4 more scheduled to be recorded. So I'm building that can, building that repository so that I don't have to worry about this again. Or if something goes wrong, I've got some breathing room to fix that.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So when that happened, did you, and obviously your show is an interview format, did you consider at all doing like a monologue show or maybe putting, you know, kind of a quick episode together? You know, even explaining why you weren't posting a regular episode or anything like that just to get something out on that day?
You know, and that's – I'm going to turn this around and ask you your opinion on my answer. Mm-hmm. But I actually did. I've done a couple of monologues. So Technology Translated is generally an interview show. However, there are certain topics where I like to be able to just fire up the mic and speak directly to the audience. So it's fun for me to mix it up a little bit. I thought about trying to do that to fill that gap and even using it as an example of here's what happened, here's why I don't have a normal episode coming out, kind of explaining things in that context. But there was a part of me that felt like I was making an excuse for not having gotten it done the way it should have been done as well. And I was, you know, I like being transparent, but at the same time, I don't want to necessarily go out there and feel like I'm just making excuses for not doing my job.
Yeah, but and it is a fine line. It's a really fine line between really being candid and looking amateurish, frankly. Yeah. You know, and you do. You know, I have to be careful sometimes because with the showrunner, you know, we've set up the showrunner to very much be a peek behind the curtain. You know, we are producing a podcast about podcasting, and we're going to show you all the warts kind of along the way as we go. So we'll leave things in, you know, we'll ask a bad interview question, leave it in, and then talk about it later. And, you know, so we've kind of set the show up like that. And I think a lot of the answer to that question that you posed is going to depend on the relationship that you've established with your audience. You know, what are their expectations? I wonder in this specific situation for you, if it wouldn't have been an interesting teaching moment, you know, since the show is technology translated, to actually be able to talk about the technical issues. It would have been different probably if it was just, they were just scheduling issues, and that's, then maybe it does come across more as an excuse. But I wonder with the relationship that you have with your audience and the subject matter that you're dealing with, if that actually would have fit pretty well, you know, to maybe explain what the issues were, explain, you know, what you're doing to prevent them in the future, or, you know, something like that would have, I think, my guess, would have been okay, you know, would have gone over well and maybe even ended up being, you know, an episode that people really appreciated. Because I have found with podcasting, it's different than with writing. You know, with podcasting, people hear your voice, they're making a connection, and occasional and or strategic self-deprecation really seems to help build the rapport with the audience, because certainly your audience, Scott, wants to see you as an expert on this subject, but they also want to see you as a friend, as a real person, as a guy. And sometimes those moments, if we handle them well, I think can really further our relationship with the audience without doing any damage to our reputation.
That is a very good point, Jared. And now that I'm hearing that perspective, I'm looking back on it thinking that's probably exactly what I should have done. The only catch for me in this situation is, and to this day, I'm still not sure exactly what our technical issues were.
Yeah.
It was just a very weird kind of circumstance. But to your point, I think that would have been a good opportunity to address that with the audience and turn it into a teaching opportunity. So I'm going to remember that the next time, because sooner or later there's going to be problems again. I just know it.
It's inevitable.
It really is. Happen. What other hurdles, what other issues do we often run into when we're producing our podcast? Certainly there are scheduling issues and there are technical issues. Anything else that you see on a regular basis that holds people back or keeps them from getting over those humps that you mentioned?
Yeah, I think the other big one is the issue of unrealistic expectations. You know, how your show does initially during a launch, a lot of times is going to have to do with what kind of built-in audience that you already have. And we've seen this a lot inside of the course. I see this a lot with people that I work with. I guess the flip side to enthusiasm is that, you know, you get enthusiastic, you're working so hard and you want to see fruits from that labor. And you want to connect so badly with an audience that you want 1,000 downloads yesterday, you know, and you want 100 email subscribers yesterday. And it just takes time for that to develop, especially if you're starting from scratch, and especially if audio is maybe a new way that you're engaging with your audience. It's like the, you know, the way that the shows, when we launched Rainmaker FM, the way that those shows kind of took off is not going to be representative for a lot of people. You know, what's more representative is, you know, my show that I'm doing, Primality Primer, you know, which had, you know, kind of a small little audience built in. But otherwise, it's just, you know, kind of picking up one or two more listeners, you know, each week, and a couple new email subscribers each week. And I've really had to be careful about my expectations getting out of whack, wanting to see it number one and what's hot in iTunes and, you know, just taking off in this big explosion. In a lot of ways, I mean, look, any type of big exposure that you can get, it's not going to be bad. But I think what's really meaningful is just the brick by brick, listener by listener, subscriber by subscriber growth that people overlook. And so they get frustrated that downloads aren't up. They get frustrated that they're not growing enough subscribers or that their subscribers aren't engaging. And that's where it's so important to just say, you got to be patient. And you've got to really cherish the people that you get. So we often see people that will have 5 subscribers, but they're worried about getting to 100 instead of really focusing on engaging with those 5 subscribers. Because those people, especially early on, the people that really connect with you early when you may not quite have found your voice yet, you'll probably look back at episode 100 and think, man, I can't believe I did that in episode 3. You know, every single show I've ever run, it's been like that. But those people that are connecting with you at that point anyway, they really love your content or they really love you. There's some connection there. And those people, well, a lot of them will end up being your longtime listeners and your biggest advocates. You know, the Assembly Call, it's another show that I run, which it's entering its 5th year now. It's a post-game show for IU basketball games. And to this day, some of the most ardent, consistent listeners and the people that retweet our live link episode after every game are a few of the people that were there for the very first show, you know, and we had 2 or 3 people listening. And so it's important to really, really cherish and acknowledge those people instead of always be focusing on the next ones. And I see that happen all the time because people hear about podcasting and they get these unrealistic expectations for what can happen. And I think you just got to slow down a little bit, understand that it will work if you put in the time, if you do what most people won't do, which is get past episode 7 and episode 25, because most shows fail by then. There is success down the road. This is a proven model. It may just take you a little longer to get there than you hope or that you think.
Yeah, I think we'd all love these things to go a little bit faster than they do, but I cannot say enough how much I love that idea, because it ties back in very naturally to the where we started the show, which is just get started.
Yeah.
It's going to take time. And had you started 6 months ago when you were thinking about this, you'd be that much further down the road. Mm-hmm. So the sooner you get started and get moving, the sooner you will get to the point that you want to get to. We can't always compress the timelines, but we have a lot more control over when we actually, you know, come out of the gate.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and most shows grow and evolve, especially new showrunners, you know, because they'll try a certain format and maybe evolve it. You know, they start with a monologue format, but they realize they want to bring in a co-host, or they start out doing a call-in show. Like we did on the Assembly Call was originally a call-in show. You would think call is an important part of a show called Assembly Call. But we actually found that people didn't like the call-ins as much as they just liked me and my co-host talking. And so after the second season, we changed the format. It was just the 3 of us. The name stayed the same, but it evolved. And you only have a guest when you go out, and it's not really until you get that content out there and it meets with an audience and you open that feedback loop, that you really start to get beyond a hypothesis and figure out what really works. And you just want to start that process as soon as you can. Understand that, like I said before, when you get to episode 100, you will look back on the early episodes and probably not be satisfied with them, but that's okay. It's not that you don't want them to be quality. You want to do the best job you can right now, because for a lot of people, this is a new medium and they may not have a lot of training in it. And Roman Mars said at Podcast Movement, I believe it was Roman Mars who said, you know, everybody has 100 hours of awful audio in them. Start getting it out. You know, like you just have to. And that's what, you know, once you do that, and again, once you get past that kind of critical number of episodes, you really start to hit your groove, both because you feel comfortable, you've got more confidence in your path, your audience is responding and giving you feedback. So you're just on a lot more solid footing.
So I want to transition a little bit here and talk about the journey. One of the things we talked about early on was the importance of trying to get several episodes in the can and the planning that goes into looking forward and the episodes that you're going to produce. One of the things I've noticed is that if you're doing episodes ad hoc, and I'm speaking from personal experience, it's much harder to tell a cohesive story week to week and really create that journey that we want to take our audience on. And this was an idea that was happening to me as I was on the stair climber, actually listening to an episode of The Showrunner.
Hey.
And I'm the In the Car and on the Stair Climber podcast guy. But I was really trying to get my head around, what kind of a journey am I taking people on with Technology Translated? Because so far it's been individual technology topics and trying to simplify things and make them easy for people. But I haven't really developed this story. Now, I'm coming up on episode 10, and one of the things I'm kicking back and thinking about is, what is the bigger picture? What is that long-term story that I want to tell? And then start lining the episodes up against that. But why don't you talk a little bit more, and we'll link out to some of the Showrunner episodes where you guys have talked about this as well, but just maybe tease us a little bit with the idea of that journey and what does that really look like if you're producing a podcast?
Yeah, I think it's really the difference between being a showrunner and being a podcaster. And this is a distinction that we make on the show, obviously. You know, a podcaster is creating these on-demand audio episodes, which is what a podcast is, but it's not necessarily taking the audience somewhere. You want to be the catalyst for some kind of transformation for the audience, because that's what keeps people coming back. That's what really gets people to connect with you. You know, for us with the Showrunner, that's about, you know, the journey that we're trying to take people on is take people from this podcast mindset and really show them how to be showrunners and show them the value of being showrunners, which means that your podcast is part of something bigger. It's part of an overall strategy for digital commerce in a lot of ways, and for creating community around your show and around your content, you know. So it's more than just the episodes. And I think being deliberate, being intentional, you know, like you're describing right now, Scott, is really important. And I think it's okay to go out the door initially without really knowing. It's like with Primality Primer. I'm doing this daily show. One of my motivations for doing it was that I knew if I committed to doing 5 episodes every week, I would get better at what had been frustrating me, which is I didn't feel like I could describe the concept well enough. I didn't have enough stories to illustrate it. And I knew if I had a show to fill every week, I would start to learn those, understand those, figure out what resonated. So then the journey would start to reveal itself, which it has. And so now I'm going to start, you know, evolving that content more. I don't think it's necessarily something people need to worry about right away. Again, if you've got that enthusiasm, if you have a basic understanding of who you're talking to, get out there. But when you get to, like, you're at this point of 10 episodes that a lot of people don't get to, frankly, they stop even before that. So congratulations to you for getting there.
Thank you.
That's actually a good time to start doing that, because you've started to get a little bit of feedback, you know, and you've started to figure out even what ideas resonate better with you and how to explain them better. And that's a good time, I think, to start refining it and really start defining the journey even more.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of the journey for us as showrunners, and how it helps us take our audience on that same journey, or at least the journey that we want them to go on. I've taken up a lot of your time today. I want to go out on this. I want to know what one or two podcasts, non-business podcasts, do you listen to that you really enjoy?
Well, you know, the timing of this question is interesting because I'm a sports guy and it is fantasy football season. And so I've got a couple of fantasy football podcasts I've been listening to. I will say this. If you're interested in podcasting and you're a fantasy football player, check out the Fantasy Footballers podcast. And not just for the advice. I mean, they do a really good job with that. But the production value of it and just some of the little bells and whistles that as you get a little bit further down the road can help your show. You know, having specific elements of your show, like on the Showrunner, you know, we've got, you know, our listener question and our podcast recommendations, and they have certain segments of their show and they have a little intro, you know, song or soundbite that leads into it. It's a really well-produced show. So I'd recommend that one. I'm a big fan of Christina Cantor's podcast, The C Method. For anybody who may be struggling with the confidence to go out the door with a podcast, her show is a lot about overcoming doubt, you know, facing up to your fears. And so that's a really good one. Those are the first two that are coming off the top of my head.
Okay, those are good. I'll have to go check those out. I don't think I've gotten into either one of those. Have you heard of one called The History of Rome?
I have not, but I've seen it, and I've been wanting to listen to it.
It is, give or take, it's around 180 episodes.
Yeah.
And it is so well done. It is so much fun to listen to. If you like history at all, even if you don't, it's interesting because you will hear so many parallels to what the rise and the fall of the Roman Empire went through to a lot of the things that we experience today in politics and whatnot. But it's also interesting because it started off as a hobby. The host of the show, Mike, really just had a passion for the history of Rome, decided to start this. It ended up taking him a few years to get all the way through it. They ended up doing tours with people that were listening to the podcast and flying a whole bunch of people over to Rome and doing these in-person tours. It really just evolved. He eventually got sponsors. But if you go back and listen to it once you're done, and I started it over just to hear some of the early episodes, it was raw. I mean, it was really, really raw. And you can hear the point at which he went out and bought a better microphone and things got better. And, you know, there are still episodes where you could tell he was sitting by the window when it was raining while he was recording. But it's kind of kind of makes you feel like you're just sitting there having a conversation. It's a really good one from both the podcasting standpoint and also from an entertainment standpoint.
All right. I'm checking that one out.
Like I said, it's a little rough in the beginning. The audio is not as good, but it gets better quickly because I think he started picking up an audience pretty fast. All right, Jared, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a whole lot of fun, always informative, and I'm going to recommend to anybody that is thinking about podcasting, please go out, subscribe to The Showrunner. It is on rainmaker.fm, and you will learn everything you want to know about podcasting. And then you guys have a class that goes along with that too, correct?
We do, yeah, the Showrunner podcasting course. So it's closed right now. I'm not sure when we'll reopen it. But for anybody who is interested in learning more about this, if you go to showrunner.fm and you get on our email list, we put together a content series called The Four Essential Elements of a Remarkable Podcast that basically walks you through our core curriculum. And this idea of the Showrunner idea of creating an audience experience. And this, you know, walks you through authenticity, usefulness, sustainability, profitability, what those mean, you know, how to incorporate them into what you're doing. And then once you're on that list, then when we do reopen the course, you'll be the first ones to know about it.
Perfect. All right, you guys, we will definitely link that up in the show notes. So go check it out. As always, if you have any other questions for me or for Jared or any of the other guests we've had on the show, find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus. I'm all over the place at VS Ellis and use the hashtag AskTechTrans. And we're going to collect all of those questions. And at some point down the road, haven't decided exactly which episode yet, maybe the episode 25 hump we want to get over.
Yes.
We're going to do just a whole big episode and answer people's questions. And we'll get some of our guests back on and make it into a little virtual party.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Be a good time. So thank you all for joining us. Jared, thank you again. And we will talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Technology Translated is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.